Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, everybody? Welcome back to an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can follow the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Thanks so much for making Pack-A-Day part of your daily routine. Make sure to like, subscribe, comment, give those five-star reviews, do all that great stuff, because we have awesome guests every single week, like the one and only Justice Mosqueda, who joins us now. You can find him on Twitter at J-U-M-O-S-Q, Jumosq. Justice, how the heck are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great. Packers are winning. Yankees are losing. What more can I ask for?
Right? You could ask for a Blazers win. You could ask for that.
We don't got to bring that up, man. I'll see you guys in 2027 or something.
Hey, you're living a better life than Bucks fans right now. I will tell you that. Like, at least there's no expectations that you're losing. Well, they're 1-2. They lost already to the Nets and the Bulls. They lost. They were down by like 20 to the Nets in the side. We don't need to, like you said, we don't need to talk about any of that.
All I know is Giannis asked like the cafeteria lady, like, "Are you getting fired if we don't win it all this year or something?"
Yeah, we're
not great.
This is all on me. This is all on me for bringing that up to begin with. They are playing the Celtics as we speak. The Celtics are winning in the third quarter, but it's at least somewhat close. So there is that. Maybe they can pull off a win tonight, but I doubt it. Let's talk some Green Bay Packers. Justice, per usual, I am going to give you the floor to go in any direction that you want to start breaking down this wonderful game against the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Burn the tape. That's my take. That game isn't happening ever again. Right? Like, I don't know what we learned from that. The Packers survived, certainly. It's not great when like four different reporters are reporting on different injuries that your team is having, and everyone's like, they're gonna be fine. And I'm like, I didn't even know all these guys dropped out by the end. Like, I was like, Josh Jacobs is hurt, Jair is hurt. I didn't know this until last night. So that just full-on survive in advance. I think my biggest takeaway is just kind of like looking at the NFC playoff picture and seeing how things shake up. Obviously, the Bears losing on that Hail Mary, hilarious, also helped us. But one thing worth noting right now, right, like the Packers are in the fifth seed. If they beat Detroit, there's potential they could be the one seed going into next week, right?
Yep.
If they lose to Detroit, there's a pretty good chance they're going to be the seventh seed. So the variance for this week of how the next couple of days can go is pretty drastic. And the reason that they can drop down so far is because the two teams breathing down their neck, right? So Packers are the fifth seed. The sixth and seventh seed are the Minnesota Vikings and the Philadelphia Eagles, the two teams that the Packers have lost to. You also have to remind yourself that, like, the NFC South has basically been decided already. I know that's a weird saying this in October, but the Falcons not only have a better record than the Buccaneers, but they've gone 2-0 against them, so they're going to win the head-to-head there, right? And then the Saints and Panthers are just horrendous. Dead. I mean, the Saints have lost six straight. It's the biggest losing streak in the NFL right now. Carolina's doo-doo. They're also playing this week, by the way. Like, that might decide who ends up, you know, picking first overall next year in Green Bay. The NFC South is kind of decided already. I think Atlanta's getting that spot unless they just have a total collapse down the stretch. And I think only Tampa's really in the conversation. I don't think the Saints are going to do anything with that. I know the Saints, there were stories coming out today where it was like their players are now want to take ownership of the team because they don't trust the coaches. And, you know, they got to start doing it from a player-led standpoint. And I'm like, this is not good.
Have the Saints had their bye yet? Because if not, like, I don't understand how Dennis Allen can make it through that. Like, it has been a nightmare.
Andy, I don't understand how Dennis Allen survived week 18 last year. When James Winston punched it in with Jamal Williams at the last second. If you would have asked me after that game which of these coaches was going to get fired, I would have said Dennis Allen instead of Arthur Smith for sure. And then the other thing I want to bring up, NFC West. The NFC West, you're going to see all this stuff about how the NFC North has, you know, the best record up to this point and since the league has been invented, basically. The NFC West is a three-way tie for right now for the leader there. The Niners winning against the Cowboys last night. I'd say last night because we're recording this on Monday. That, I think, kept their season alive and is a bummer because I don't really want to play San Francisco. Their defense is getting better. You think at some point McCaffrey's going to come back, right?
Just in time for Green Bay. Just in time for Green Bay is when Christian McCaffrey's going to come back. You can book that one right now.
So, yeah, unfortunately, the NFC is very much alive. The Packers have found themselves competing for a wild card spot and the NFC North at a time when the NFC North is historically competitive and like a 4-2 team is the seventh seed right now in the NFC. So, something to keep an eye on. There's big variance on how this could go.
Yeah, it's very tough sledding in the NFC. Going back to the Saints for a second, they have a week 12 bye week. Their game's upcoming, like you said, at Carolina this week. Then they have Atlanta, and then they have Cleveland. Like, if they go even like 1-2 in those games, like, I don't know how they make it past the bye week without making a change there. Big disappointment in Spencer Rattler so far, but I digress.
I didn't see that whole game, but I saw like Jake Haener was in, and I was Rattler got hurt
for the second straight week. No, they benched him for the second.
Yeah, that's what I was like. Rattler got hurt. It's like, nope, he got benched, and I was like,
well, they have nothing. Like, I mean, they have Kamara and nothing. Like, I think a lot
of big extension. Shout out to Kamara.
Yeah,
kicking the can down the road again. Just never taking their medicine.
Me, and Ken Ingles could hop on a podcast for a solid 7 days talking about the Saints, like, you know, complete failures from a salary cap standpoint, and it would probably be like it would be entertaining. It's funny though, just going back to the original conversation of like, what's the takeaways from this game? It's really been, and I hate the word like narrative because I feel like it's like we're trying to spin something from a narrative standpoint, which is the last thing I ever want to or try to do. It just like usually games tell us a story and we learn certain things or, you know, figure out certain things about the team. I'm really, to your point of like burning the tape, I was really sort of just trying to figure out, other than like, they found a way to win. Like, the Malik Willis story is really cool, but even that was like, what, 5-6 passes in this game. Josh Jacobs kind of put the team on his back. We saw some decent things from like Edgerrin Cooper and stuff like that. But like, there wasn't a ton to like really sink your teeth into this one and be like, this is something that I learned about how this team can operate moving forward, or something they did just atrociously bad that, oh my God, this is going to be their Achilles heel forever. It just didn't feel like there was, as much as I thought this was a crazy game, ebb and flow, tons to talk about, the more that I dug into it, I'm just like, there's not that much. And I don't, like, to your point, I don't think there's actually much that is ever going to happen like this game again. And I think that's spot on.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of things happened, right?
Yeah.
You can experience the game as it rolled out. I mean,
it was an entertaining game, if nothing else.
Right. But in terms of, the same thing that you said, where it's like, coming out of this game, what have we learned about the 2024 Green Bay Packers? I'm like, I don't know. Like, they have some decent depth. Like, even like some of the depth question marks where I'm like, Stokes. I'm like, we've talked about Stokes already, right? Like, Edgerrin Cooper continues to play well. We've talked about that already, right? Yep. Evan Williams seems to be a pretty big part of the defense. You don't want to lose that guy. That's pretty important.
Even the Malik Willis story, we played for 2 weeks earlier this year. Like, even that is something like
none of this is really new. I guess, you know, some of the big runs that ended up getting called back with Josh Jacobs, I think maybe that's something where it's like, the Josh Jacobs thing is so weird. And I know you go in the press room with these guys, so I don't want to like call out.
No, go for it. You're fine. I very rarely do interviews with the players because of me doing.
I was talking about beat reporters.
Gotcha. Oh no, you're fine. You're whatever.
So, all right, one guy who keeps talking about this, and I don't have anything against him. I just think it's weird that he keeps bringing this up.
Oh, are you talking? I know exactly what you're talking about. No, please do.
Ryan Wood, 20 carries for Josh Jacobs, and I don't understand why he's so adamant on Josh Jacobs needs to get 20 carries a game. LaFleur has always rotated the backs, right? He finally got that opportunity in this game, right? But like, Josh Jacobs is like already third in like rushing yards, like in the NFL this year.
Yeah.
So I don't understand why there's like this narrative of like, we're underutilizing Josh Jacobs and all this stuff. So like, maybe that's, you know, when we're talking about narrative, right, and constructing that narrative, maybe that's something, especially if you account for, you know, the rushing yards that end up getting called back. Still kind of worried about, like, Rashid Walker and just the holding penalties and just penalties in general. And I don't know, man, like, are we sure he's going to be the left tackle moving forward? Like, he's okay, but, like, how much money is he going to ask for? What can you do with that money? Like, all that stuff. I don't know. It's a big question mark to me.
He's not a free agent, obviously, this offseason, free agent the following offseason. So, no, he's got a ways to go to prove it right now, which is very disappointing because I really, really enjoyed the way that he played at the end of last year. I was really excited about it. I thought he had a really good camp, like just clearly won the left tackle spot. It wasn't even in question really at any point in training camp. Thought he had a really nice camp.
At the time of the draft, remember?
Oh, yeah.
You and LaFleur both said that Jordan Morgan was a left tackle.
Yeah.
Like, I know this gets brushed away and we think of Jordan Morgan as like rotational right tackle right now. They were adamant that he was going to get an opportunity at left tackle. And then
I think Walker slowly, just beat him.
Yeah, I think slowly they were just like, we got to feed him less. Okay, we're just going to ride with Walker at left tackle right now.
I think they came to the conclusion very quickly in camp that, like, all right, Myers is going to start at center. Elton's going to start at left guard. Zach Tom's going to start at right tackle. Rashid's going to start at left tackle. And the weak link was right guard. So let's plug him in at right guard and see if he can either push Sean Ryan or beat out Sean Ryan. I think that was very clearly the distinction. But to Rashid Walker's credit, like, he was really, really, you know, he just beat him out clean. And there was never any question as to whether or not he was going to be the left tackle. I went into the season feeling like not only would he be the tackle this year, but going into the future as well. It's been one of the least talked about kind of disappointing aspects of this team so far is just his play at left tackle. And I've like kind of wanted to be like, all right, like, I've seen him play well before. Let's not jump to too many conclusions. I thought this might've been his worst game of the season so far, and he's not had a great start to the season. So it's not trending in the right direction. And I just keep wanting a little bit more from a player that I saw play some pretty darn good football at the end of last year.
Yeah, I know it's a weird thing to say, but like, even guys who are highly penalized, like Laremy Tunsil's highly penalized right now, right?
Yep.
But you live with it because it's Laremy Tunsil. When a guy isn't that consistent on a down and down basis and is also getting penalized, and you know you're taking 20 yard explosive runs off of the board, I mean that's a kick to the nuts, right? To everyone across the board. And Not great. I mean, I don't think I'm calling for, certainly, especially with Jordan's situation, and I don't know if you want to hit on the injuries or whatever, but like,
yeah,
with Jordan Love's situation, like, you probably don't want to switch up the left tackle this week,
no,
especially against the Lions. No. So, yeah.
No, I don't think it's going to happen. I think he maintains that left tackle spot. We do know that Green Bay's willing to throw some competitions in there. Even if they decided to do something, I almost feel like it would maybe be Dillard or Telfort that would start rotating in even more than Morgan. And just to like maybe light a fire like they did last year. And then all of a sudden Walker started playing a whole heck of a lot better. I don't know. I still think it's his job. I just want to see him start playing better. Cause again, we've seen it last year and we know that he's capable of it. So let's hopefully see it again. But there's a few of those on the team, specifically on the defensive line, which I know we'll talk about as well. But yeah, from an injury standpoint, to your point, mostly got great news on almost everything. So Jair Alexander, MRI, no major issues with the knee, unknown for this week against Detroit, but doesn't sound like it's going to be anything serious or long-term. Jordan Love, groin strain, I think it was, and day-to-day, could play against Detroit, will probably be quote-unquote limited throughout the course of the week, and they'll make that decision at the end of the week, but nothing long-term there. Josh Jacobs is fine per Bill Huber. Evan Williams is fine per Aaron Nagler. And then the only other one that we don't know about, and I don't even know if anything actually happened, and I'll say that again, is Eric Stokes, who got taken out of the game on the final drive and they swapped Carrington Valentine in. And it just would be weird that they would switch Carrington Valentine in mid drive to the point to where like it was in the, like they were almost going like no huddle and they quickly made the change. And it looked like there were a few plays where right before then, like Eric Stokes, it looked like he was holding his hand. So I don't want to say it for sure. I'm not reporting there's an injury or anything like that, but just a weird circumstance at the end. So that's the other one. That's the only one I haven't heard anything on whatsoever. So, but mostly on Monday, great, great news from an injury standpoint.
Yeah, for sure. And I think Josh Myers is another one to keep an eye on. I think that issue is going to linger on. I don't know if you noticed it during the game, kind of to your Stokes point, like there were a couple times where he was grabbing his hand, right? And we know that he had a wrist injury and he was questionable coming into the game and stuff. So
do we know which wrist it is?
I do not. I don't know if it was a snapping wrist or not. I would assume that it's probably not if he was able to go. But yeah, that's another one that I'm going to keep an eye on. Obviously, you know, the Quay concussion thing too. But I could see, you know, Myers not practicing on Wednesday or something like that. And just don't be shocked by that.
The thing too is like, and I think the thing that always gets lost in injuries, and I talk about this probably a little bit too much, is like, just because they played in the game with the injury does not mean they have the same level of effectiveness. For me, this was Josh Myers' worst game of the year that I graded, and like the second worst player on offense only to Rashid Walker, and PFF had an aggressively bad grade on Josh Myers this week. So like by all accounts, or at least anyone that's grading it, this was by far and away Josh's worst game of the season. And it came after he had this hand injury and he did not look like himself in this way, at least not like he looked in previous games. So it's great that he was able to get out there and play and still have the calls at the line and everything like that. But and I don't know, I can't say for certain that the wrist injury played a part in it, but when you were healthy before this and looked much better than we've seen Myers in the past, and then have your worst game immediately following the news that he's got this wrist injury, it certainly seemed like it probably affected him in some way.
Yeah, for sure. Again, this goes back to that point that I was just like, you know, I know it's a win. So you do the, you know, Tony Sperano bury the football after a big loss, right? Or a big losing streak. But it's just like, I don't know what we can take from this moving forward other than like we survived. I mean, this team, Matt's got to have so much fun with this team right now, where he's just like, we're beating the odds every single time. Like, you know, I can only imagine how close-knit that locker room becomes in situations like this. At the very least, you're going to be able to say that, you know, going into the postseason and stuff, assuming that this team makes the postseason, right? Looking pretty good right now, though, that they're battle-tested, right? They've seen these moments and, you know, kind of beaten the odds a couple times. So at least they'll have that in their back pocket. But as far as, you know, when these guys are healthy, is this game plan replicable? Like, it's just not relevant, I don't think, moving forward.
Yeah, they're definitely going to need those players to be healthy. Obviously, Jordan Love being 1A on that list. And to your point, I think there's going to be things that they're going to have to just kind of ignore from this game, and then, you know, work on some of the things, I think, from the defensive line, offensive line standpoint that they can get better at. But as a fan, or even as an analyst, again, you have to kind of pick and choose what things you really want to take away from this one. And I just don't think there's a whole heck of a lot. I do want to
say Chris Brooks. I
lied. And that was my next thing.
Chris Brooks. What the hell?
I love it. I absolutely love it. I'm a big fan so far. And, you know, he obviously had a couple of really nice blitz pickups, and it seems like he's going to be like their designated pony guy with Josh Jacobs. And it just felt like they went in those formations quite a bit in this game. I think they like his blocking ability, and I think they like his running ability, catch out of the backfield. But what a random out of nowhere signing that has already paid dividends. And he looks like their best pass pro back there already, which is pretty crazy as well. I don't know. I'm a fan. What about you?
Hello, friends. We are quickly approaching the halfway point of the regular season already, which seems absolutely absurd to say. But despite time flying by fast, there's still plenty of season left, which means there's plenty of Prize Picks winning to be done. Now, with Prize Picks, you can make your selections in less than 60 seconds and turn your sports opinions into real money all season long. And right now, when you sign up on Prize Picks, you get $50 instantly when you play $5. You don't even need to win to receive the bonus. It's guaranteed. Now, of course, Prize Picks is the best place to get real money sports action, and you can join over 10 million users who are already signed up. In week 9, I'm going with Amon-Ra St. Brown against Green Bay. Yes, I know we don't want him to do well, but he seemingly always does well against Green Bay. And I'm also going with Christian Watson against Detroit. Finally, I'm looking at Patrick Mahomes to have a huge game against Tampa on Monday Night Football. Now, there are plenty of options to choose from, but just remember, whoever you choose, you can download the Prize Picks app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly when you play $5. That's code PACKADAY on Prize Picks to get $50 instantly when you play $5. Prize Picks. Run your game. What's going on, everybody? I am so insanely happy that football is back. And as excited as I am right now, I can't even begin to tell you how excited I am to be back at Lambeau Field. And this year, I'm going to be taking my oldest son to his first ever regular season game, and that moment is going to mean so much to me. Thankfully, as I search for tickets to the game, Game Time has a brand new feature called Game Time Picks that makes getting tickets to see your favorite teams play live even easier. I'm actually scrolling through Game Time right now as we speak, and there are two tickets exactly in the section where I want, and it's currently listed as one of their amazing deals. Section 137, two tickets, and it's just so insanely easy to navigate and find amazing seats at the best prices, plus have the exact view of the seats you're purchasing. I can see them right now. And my absolute favorite part, Game Time has the lowest price guarantee. You'll get the lowest price to the game, or Game Time will credit you 110% of the difference. So take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code PACKADAY for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code PACKADAY, P-A-C-K-A-D-A-Y, for $20 off. Download Game Time today. What time is it? Game Time.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the pass pro was definitely what stood out. And then the second thing would have been, hey, Pony Package is back out of nowhere. Like, we haven't done this in a while, right? They're still not running too many wrinkles out of it. But I do think it's interesting because he basically split as many carries as like Emmanuel Wilson did.
He had a couple more, I think. Yeah.
And I mean, Marshawn Lloyd might get activated in 2 days, right? Who knows? Because he's designated to return from injured reserve. And we thought, you know, that hamstring injury wasn't going to be.
Did they officially designate him?
I believe they've designated him to return. He hasn't come back to practice.
But they haven't opened the window yet, right? They haven't opened the 20.
They haven't opened the window. Okay. They haven't opened the window. Yeah.
Yes.
But that's what I mean. It's like, you know, I think everyone was just kind of looking at that situation. And before AJ Dillon went down with the stinger and Lloyd got hurt, I think people were looking at Emmanuel Wilson as a guy who could potentially be cut, right? And I doubt they keep four. I really doubt they keep four. So
I think they keep four. I don't know who you're cutting. My guess would be like Brenton Cox.
Okay, that's fair. Because I guess by the time Musgrave can come back, John Fitzpatrick. So when you pick up a guy off of the practice squad, right? That guy has to be, he has to be on your roster for 3 weeks. So by the time Musgrave comes back, John Fitzpatrick will be off. And then at that point,
he already made it because he was inactive for 2 weeks and then active for this week. So I think Fitzpatrick, you can already let go of. So that'll be a must.
I mean, those are the only guys that are designated to return. So I guess, that's the roster. We did it. We solved it.
I mean, if you're like with the way that the defensive ends are playing right now, if you're already not interested in even activating Brenton Cox, much less playing him, Aaron Mosby got his first two snaps this week. You're obviously not activating six defensive ends in any given game. Yeah. I mean, your choices are obviously, if you want to keep the four running backs, of course, would be Travis Glover, because he's basically on a redshirt year, draft pick. My guess, if I had to guess, is that nobody claims Travis Glover, but I don't know if they want to risk it or not. Brenton Cox, I would argue the same thing. My guess is that nobody claims Brenton Cox, and I think you're probably more willing to risk it. And if somebody does claim him, you just tip your cap and say, all right, whatever. We're on a year and a half and he can't get in any games whatsoever. Like, is it going to be that big of a loss? The other one would potentially be Malik Heath. I don't think they do that, but just because you've got five wide receivers that you're already struggling to even get like Bo Melton snaps. I don't think that they would do that, but like those would probably be your three options. And then, or John Fitzpatrick, and you just go with two tight ends and there's a decent chance that maybe you can convince Fitzpatrick just to go back on your practice squad. And then you've got three elevations for him too. And then hopefully by that time, Musgrave is back. So I think those would be your potential options.
Yeah, it's a weird situation. I also don't know what's going to happen with Rochelle moving forward, right? Because we've seen the Packers do. I mean, the two big examples that I would give Packers fans is Patrick Taylor. And then earlier this year with Andrew Beck, the fullback, right? Where, you know, we exhaust your three elevations. And then once your elevations are up and you're a veteran player, it's catch and release, right? And then, you know, if there's an injury, we'll do the thing where, you know, Patrick Taylor is signed to the Patriots practice squad and we pluck you up to get the 53. But they're not really wasting practice squad spots. It's weird how they view that as a real deal asset. I think it's probably because you basically have like one practice squad spot per position. So like you only get to develop one guy at each spot.
Yeah.
So it becomes more valuable than when you think of like, hey, we have 16 spots. Why we couldn't have found room for Andrew Beck. I almost called him Tyler Davis. So Rochelle's been called up three times now. And depending on, you know, what happens with the whole corner situation with Jair and Eric Stokes and all that, right? I could see the team moving on from him, even though he's played probably like 16 games for the team the last 2 years. He's, you know, significant contributor on special teams, mostly a reserve at corner.
But you also have the situation where Jair may miss this week, and you could have a situation where we don't know the Eric Stokes, you know, spot if he's going to be hurt either. So they could actually need him this week. And that would be another one where you could have to open up a roster spot if you want him to be the guy, or if you just feel okay with one of the other corners on the practice squad, they could obviously go in that direction. It does feel like they have a little bit of a different feel too, for like, if it's like a Donovan Jennings, they're not using that spot as like a call-up spot. They're using that as like a, we want to develop new spot. But if it's like an Andrew, if it's like somebody that's like a 4, 5, 6 year veteran or something, and they're on that, they're going to use your three spots a little bit more and then say, oh, we use your three spots. See you later. If we need you, we'll add you to the active roster later.
Especially at those special teams positions, right? Tight end, safety, linebacker isn't really a spot where they're strong right now, just because they had like injury and stuff. I mean, they weren't that deep even in camp, right? But then I think Goforth probably would have been the guy for them there after cutdowns if he were healthy, but they ended up having to waive him with an injury designation. I think he reverted back to IR. I think who is it? Let me find him. The linebacker that they have on, Chris Russell, who is just like the teammate of Edgerrin Cooper at A&M.
I liked Chris Russell in preseason, by the way. I really liked him.
I think he got signed in like August, right? Like he has not been here that long. So no. I think that's the reason why you're not seeing a linebacker get called up right now.
Yeah, if you get to Chris Russell on your depth chart, things have gone very, very wrong in some capacity.
I was worried going into this game. I'm going to be honest, man. Like, you have four linebackers and a three linebacker base. Like, that's a tough situation. Plus, we haven't seen Tyrone Hopper at all.
No.
I still haven't seen it. So, like, I don't know what to expect from
this. I thought this could potentially be a week this past week where they, like, got him just those, like, 5 to 8 snaps just to be, like, because they seem to, like, want to get these rookies out on the field in some way just to start getting them experience. So I'm like, what a great opportunity in some base defense. Get him 8 to 10 snaps here or there just to see what he can do and just to start getting him ingrained. But nope, not even a hint of Tyrone Hopper.
Hey, they said they had a second round grade on him or whatever, right? Top 50 grade, whatever it was after the draft. Mind you, this is the guy who pretty much everyone thought was a fifth rounder. I watched him pre-draft. That was the most surprising pick to me, for sure. I still don't fully understand what the hell is going on with that situation. But I really liked Ketan Oladapo, and he's like not getting any snaps. He's
buried.
He's inactive every week. Yeah.
He's just buried. Like, it's tough because Zane Anderson's your special team safety. And then the other three we're already struggling to get on the field at the same time because you liked them all so much. But I just don't think there's a spot for him. I thought maybe you could do some like nickel linebacker stuff with him, but like, they're already using now Edgerrin Cooper. Like, they're trying to get him as many snaps as possible in that, which you don't want to take him off the field. So I just don't know where you use him. And he obviously was behind the eight ball to begin with missing all the time in rookie minicamp, OTAs, minicamp, you know, beginning of training camp. So that is probably just a redshirt year for him.
Yeah, I get it. Especially if, you know, Quay or Eric Wilson are going to be the green dot too, and you can't really take them off the field in those situations. Yeah. There's just not going to be much space if you also want to bring Edgerrin Cooper along, and that's more important.
All right, since we don't have like a ton to take away for this game, are you ready for me to say what I want to say, and then you can call me an idiot?
Let's go. Who are we trading? We're trading.
No trading. I am ready. I am officially ready for Eric Wilson over Quay Walker. I'm going to say it. I'm ready for Eric Wilson. You can like, I will very much love if you disagree with me on this, but like, just what I have seen out of Eric Wilson from these past two games of like him actually taking on offensive linemen and going to stack and shed and go make plays. That's enough for me. Like I there's nothing that I can point to. I get that Quay has all the athleticism. I don't think he's like this atrocious player. But like, I just don't know that there's anything that I can point to with Quay that I'm like, I really enjoy him doing this. And with Eric Wilson, I'm at least seeing somebody that's willing to take on things, fly around to the football. And it just seems like he's playing a little bit more instinctual. And I get there's not any upside with Eric Wilson. I'm not saying that like, I even want to see him, you know, full time or whatever, but like, man, I feel like the linebackers have played better with Wilson, McDuffie, and specifically Cooper than anything that I've seen from Quay over the last like 2.5 seasons. So I know that like they're not going to do this and Quay is their guy and he's the mic and he's calling the plays and whatever. And I expect them to continue with it. But like, I'm kind of just ready to be like, I'm cool with Eric Wilson.
I'm not going to lie to you and tell you that they're not better when Quay isn't on the field. I mean, it's something that I've noticed and we've talked about a lot in the APC Slack where I'm like, man, like, I don't know. It's an interesting thing because you see the athleticism and all that, but you're also 3 years in, right? And there's hasn't been development and you're going to have to make a decision on the fifth year option pretty soon.
There's no way, right? There's no way they can do it.
You can't do it, especially the way that they have it now. Yeah.
Yeah. Who did they do it for? That was the huge mistake. Oh, it was Savage. Like they can't do Savage again. They cannot, make the exact same mistake that they did. I think Wyatt gets it. I think Wyatt gets the fifth year option.
Yeah, because it's tiered now, right? So like, he's not going to get the Pro Bowl fifth year option. It's going to be just like a normal, yeah, we'll pick it up. Wyatt's an interesting situation too, but Quay is an interesting guy. Cause like, I don't know, man. If I'm Rebrovich, like, give me a shot at this guy because he's athletic, right?
You mean at the edge, yeah?
Yeah, like give me a shot at the edge. Like he doesn't have to play first second down, right? If you want to use him first second down as a stack linebacker or as a reserve player, like he's been getting practice there for 3 years already, right? But like, give me a shot at getting a little bit more juice off of the edge because I kind of think that's where the Packers need some help, especially if, I mean, what, we've had two reports now that Preston Smith is potentially a trade candidate. So, like, I don't know.
Is that – okay, I want to go to – I want to come back to Preston. I want to go back to Quay for a second. If I told you that you had to play devil's advocate and sell me on why Green Bay – is still like, you know, Quay's the guy, he's going to be the mic, we're not making any changes. What would your take be on why Green Bay is just like, no matter what, he's going to be the guy that's playing every snap on defense?
They believe he's going to figure it out and he has more athleticism than McDuffie and Wilson. And that's kind of it, right? I mean, Wilson, otherwise, like, I don't think any of those three linebackers, I think Cooper's getting coverage. I don't think any of those three linebackers are.
Wait, breaking. You think who's getting what?
Oh, let's say Walker, McDuffie, and Wilson. I don't think any of them are great in coverage. I think Cooper is getting coverage.
Sorry, I thought you said you think Cooper's getting cut, and I'm like, wait, what just happened?
No. So I think Walker, McDuffie, Cooper, from a coverage perspective, is kind of a wash if you like adjust for what they're actually being asked to do. But where I see the issue is like, yeah, man, McDuffie and Wilson are better in the run. I mean, we haven't seen them jump into the wrong gap with a running back staring straight at them, right? And it ends up going for 15 yards because you're in the same gap as Kenny Clark, right? I don't know how many times we've seen that with Quay and the Packers.
So, a lot of false steps too.
Yeah, so I understand the like athleticism upside, but at what point does potential maybe not matter, right? But matter less certainly going into year three, especially midway through the season. So edge is not a position where you're learning a lot, right? Like outside of stunt paths, like you're kind of just lining up in a gap, penetrating, keep your outside shoulder free, right? And then just get into the backfield as quick as possible, find the quarterback. Walker's big enough, right, even as a linebacker, that I think he can do some of that stuff, even if, you know, it's second and eight instead of
– Let me counterbalance this for a minute because I've also seen Quay Walker go one-on-one on a blitz against a running back multiple times and get absolutely stuffed. So, like, my one thing is, like, am I going to be that convinced that he can now go up against – tight ends, offensive tackles, and win the one-on-ones in those situations?
Well, I mean, you can use him as like a walk-down guy, right? I mean, they do a lot of the mug front stuff and things like that. Like, I don't know. I mean, if you're asking me what does Quay do well, Quay is an athlete. And that's kind of where it stops and starts. And, okay, where – if I just have a raw athlete, where do I want
to Yeah, I get you what you're saying, for sure.
I need him to be a pass rusher. So, yeah, it's – Hard conversations. You know what the worst thing is too? Do you know who the top linebacker in this draft is?
I do not.
All right.
Is it a Georgia guy? Are you going to tell me it's a Georgia guy? Is it going to be another like?
Guess the last name. It is a Georgia guy. Guess the last name.
Is it Walker? Like, I don't know. Is it really? Is it his brother?
No relation. No relation, but Jalen Walker. So there's two guys in the top 50 on the consensus draft board right now. It's Jalen Walker at 26. And then number two is Harold Perkins, who's like 220 pounds soaking wet, was an All-American pass rusher at LSU as a freshman and currently has a torn ACL, hasn't really been able to transition from the edge to the linebacker position successfully over the last
years. You know college better than I do. Is linebacker just dead in college?
It's so bad.
Because I know that they just use athletes just to kind of chase after everything. Is it just?
It's so bad. The Mint tight front, if you look that up, T-I-T-E, right? And then Mint, like, you know, what you put in your mouth when your breath smells bad. It's kind of like what Barry did, but with one. You basically don't use an edge rusher. So you're jamming up the interior on the box to make it just like run and chase for those linebackers. And then you're down an edge rusher and you swap out that edge rusher with corner. And that's kind of what all of these, you know, high level college programs are doing right now. And with the transfer portal and NIL and everything up, like if you're doing well at a mid level, you start trickling up to that. And it's just everyone is playing this defense. It is basically built to stop primarily RPO offenses on those wide college hashes. So it's like, it's really not doing anything for NFL development. I think defensive line in general too is another position that is getting hit really hard. Again, you know, if you only have one edge rusher on the field, how many of those guys are you developing, right? And if you're just jamming guys into the box and dissuading inside run based off of the amount of bodies that you have, how good are those defensive tackles getting? So I think those are kind of the situations that college football is running into right now. And that's why you're seeing defense just not put out a whole lot of talent.
Yeah. I mean, we saw it last year, right? The first defensive player went, what, like 12th overall, whatever Latu went. He went like, what, 12th, 13th, 14th, somewhere in that range. And I mean, that's crazy to have any defensive players go in the top 10. It's really absurd, but it is definitely a different brand of football right now. I want to get back to edge because we were talking about that. I want to talk about the Preston Smith thing. I want to talk about the pass rush win rates again because I know you were posting those on Twitter. But the Preston thing is weird to me because unless Green Bay is like, getting that out there of like, yeah, teams are calling for Preston Smith. Like, you better get your offers in. Like, it doesn't pass the smell test to me because he's not exactly tearing it up. The contract isn't super like, you know, like teams are going to be calling up for him. It feels like a weird situation.
Yeah, I think I can kind of understand the reasoning. I mean, I've been banging this drum since the spring, right?
Yeah,
I think Preston's a better fit in a 3-4 because of his ability to drop into coverage, because of his ability to set the edge a little bit more and not necessarily be like a every down pass rusher, right? So I do see why teams would think that's valuable. And then I guess the second thing is just the incentives on his contract, right? Like if he gets 10 sacks, he's going to make a pretty good amount of money. And the team that trades for him inherits that contract. Now, Preston, we're at midseason. Preston's a pretty far away from 10 sacks right now, but they think like maybe the off chance of saving salary cap in that situation is worth it. The other thing too, that maybe this is the best reason, honestly, it's just that, you know, Van Ness is 23 years old. He's a former first round pick. We spent a very high draft pick on this kid. He still doesn't know a pass rush move right now. He's still athletic. And if your belief is that, you know, he has to get game reps to get better at that, then clearing the path for those game reps isn't crazy to me. I think right now, Preston is probably still a better pass rusher than LVM, though. And that's not even his strength, right? No. Preston's strength. So, yeah, it would be interesting to basically downgrade, for lack of a better term, at defensive end to get more athletic and younger, just so that you have your ducks in order going into next season. I will say, this upcoming college draft, I haven't seen, I've like studied a lot of these guys, but people have said that like the edge rushers are what is good in this upcoming class. So maybe it's one of those situations where it's like, you know, we're going to spend a first round pick on something. There's a lot of these edge rushers. Like, we should probably get an answer on LVN before we potentially make a mistake one way or another. Right.
And that's really what Goody sort of did with the Rasul Douglas trade at the time, was clear a path for Carrington Valentine, Eric Stokes coming back, and some of these corners that he felt needed to play and that they specifically needed to get an evaluation on prior to the start of the 2024 season. Now, obviously, they're in a different spot right now than they were at the trade deadline last year, but I could very much like, and we don't know, like maybe they really like Mosby or they really like Brenton Cox, but they just can't get him on the field right now because of the other four. I don't think that's the case. I don't want to be very clear.
Like, I kind of doubt that. I think Mosby's an interesting guy because of his body type, right? Because he's a special teams guy who is an edge rusher. And there's not a lot of those guys. So I think that's why he's being activated. I think if they had to play one actually at defensive end, they'd probably play Cox over Mosby. It's just that Mosby can play those special teams reps. But whether or not, I mean, there's teams that get in five pass rushers in a game, right? Like, if they really thought Cox was that big of a difference maker, Cox would have been on the field by now. Cox wouldn't have been passed up by Keyshawn Banks, who's now, I believe he's with the UFL. I think he signed with the UFL, got called up last playoffs to play over Brent Cox from the practice squad. So,
I'm not
sold that Cox is some hidden gem and the team is smart for stashing him away.
Yeah, that's why I said earlier, I think if you do have to open a spot, I think that's one way that you could definitely open a spot. All right, I know this is you're the last person I should be asking this about, because I know you have a desire and propensity to want to see smaller players at defensive end, not bigger players. But I kind of like Carl Brooks as a potential, just sometimes on the edge. I'm not saying all the time, and I know we're already trying to clear, you know, space for LVN, but I kind of don't mind and don't hate that he had a play out there this past week that he looked pretty decent doing it. I kind of don't hate the idea of a Rashawn Gary, Carl Brooks defensive end with Kenny Clark and Devontae Wyatt on the interior, but I will allow you to talk me out of it.
I like it better in pass rushing situations for sure, when he could do picks and stuff. Like, there's sometimes where, you know, Kenny Clark will be at the end and Rashawn Gary will be a defensive tackle, and they figure out a way how to run some sort of game to get those guys up. And I definitely like Brooks in those situations. I wouldn't play him there on an every down basis.
No, I agree with that.
In part because you just need the reps at defensive tackle too, right? Like, who knows how often they're going to have Wooden activated. T.J. Slayton's obviously on a pitch count. Devontae is coming off of an injury. But yeah, I mean, getting Brooks on the field more, sign me up. I know he hasn't had as many splashes as he had last season, but coming into the year, you know, I would have guessed. I mean, I would have thought Brooks would have been closer to pushing Wyatt for a starting job than just T.J. Slayton owning it and, you know, getting his pitch count, but still starting every single week. So
yeah,
get him on the field more. You're not going to hear any bitching and complaining about me, especially when the pass rush is looking like it is right now, when it's just straight rushes, at least.
Yeah, it's not been great. A couple other things before we get out of here. Thoughts on Javon Bullard's struggles this past week?
Yeah, I don't know what the situation is there. Because again, I'm not necessarily so. I know people use Keyshawn as like a pinata for some reason. I understand that last season he didn't have the best season, but it was his first time really playing that position. And now he's like league average at both slot corner and outside. That's like, from my perspective, there's nothing to complain about what Keyshawn does, other than, unless, you know, you're complaining about what you could have in upside, and that costs assets, right? And it's just, okay, well, what would you have spent? You don't want a linebacker? All right, we don't have Edgerrin Cooper. But, you know, you get a cornerback. Does that make the team better? I don't know if it does, right? I'm not certain that our best unit isn't Keyshawn in the slot and Carrington Valentine outside opposite of Jair. And I know that's tough to, you know, you're basically fitting a guy who started the season as, you know, your full-time safety. But I don't know if Bullard is one of the best five DBs out there right now. And I know – we haven't gotten a lot of Carrington Valentine. I still, you know, would like to see at least a little bit more of a rotation. I'm certainly out on Stokes. I don't think Stokes had a great game in this one either.
Nope.
He hasn't had a great season overall. Nope. Jair's been playing much better since the since the Eagles game. So outside of Stokes kind of being a glaring like week to week type of hole, I think Bullard, I'm just like, I don't know if you're that good right now, which is fine because he's like 22, right?
Yeah.
I'm not saying cut the kid. I'm just like, I don't know. There might be a better lineup out there, and I'd like to see Carrington get some more snaps. But I kind of say that whenever we bring up any of these other DBs.
Yeah. No, I still like him in the big nickel and just getting those guys on the field together. And I think there's a role. But I think last game against Houston where Bullard played like 20-some snaps as the big nickel, like that kind of felt right. Now, the issue was they were using Stokes on the outside and not right. Valentine on the outside. When they did that, that to me was the bigger issue. But I think they very clearly come to the conclusion that Evan Williams is the full-time safety next to Xavier McKinney. And that is the right conclusion to get to. And then I think if you want to go with your base defense being Jair and Nixon, I'm cool with that. If you want to go big nickel where it's Bullard in the slot and Nixon on the outside, cool with that. Now, when you want to go like coverage nickel or like have the extra corner on there, Nixon inside, and then I need Valentine on the outside. And then I think, then to me, we've got everything figured out. If it's a more passing or obvious passing situation and 11 personnel, all right, Nixon, Valentine, Jair with Williams and McKinney back there. If it's maybe 22 personnel, not 22, 12 personnel. If it's 12 personnel and you want to go with the big nickel and put Javon Bullard in the slot, cool, I'm fine with that. But and then again in base, just take him off the field. I think they're close to it, but just that one last thing of getting Valentine in there for Stokes is to me the big thing that they got to fix. And for me, for Bullard, just really quick, like I'm willing to chalk this up to a rookie performance. He got switched from nickel corner to back to safety mid game, probably hasn't been playing as much at safety in practice and has been probably honing his skills a little bit more in the slot. I think he just had one of those days as a rookie, and I think he'll bounce back. I've really liked for the most part what he's done the rest of the year, but this was a little bit of a hang with him for Javon Bullard.
Yeah. And the other thing too, is like, even if I want Carrington outside corner, if there's any injury at a DB spot, right, Bullard is next man up, not necessarily filling in for like Jair or something if Jair goes down.
No. But
the way you have to reshuffle that room, it's like, all right, Bullard is subbing in. Like, you're our super sub type of situation. Yep. So that's the way I kind of view it. I don't know why it's such a tough pill for this team to swallow, the Eric Stokes situation.
We're talking about the same team that did it with Kevin King for forever. Like, they, yeah, like, and we're having the same conversation sort of with Quay. Like, they get, I don't know. And I know that like King was obviously the, like part of the previous era too. Although, you know, they certainly King followed into this era. They just stick with these guys and it feels like they just can't find a way to pull the bandaid and say like, yeah, we got this one wrong and we're going to move on. But in like other scenarios, you see Amari Rodgers and Kamal Martin and like other guys where they'll just be like completely rip the bandaid and be like, or even like a seventh round pick in, the quarterback this year, who I can't think, Michael Pratt, where they're just like, we don't even want him on the practice squad. We're ready to rip that one completely. Like, it's just so weird to me that some of these guys, they are just do not give up on ever, seemingly.
Yeah, and they had so many outs, right? Yeah, Carrington plays well. You obviously thought enough about Keyshawn to have him practice at outside corner at some point, you know, during the summer. When guys were down and stuff like that, and he's doing that in games right now. You drafted another corner. I don't like, how do you think that was going to fit in? Right. Yeah. All these injuries that have happened to Stokes, maybe he's just like a really good locker room guy and they're just like, you know, don't want to rock the boat too much because of that. But see, Stokes isn't playing well. He's in the last year of his deal. Unless he signs one of those weird vet, like minimum, like we pay him $2 million, but it only costs like 1.2 against the cap or something like that. I can't imagine that he's going to be back in Green Bay. And even in that situation, I don't know if you want to be with the same team again. So,
yeah, both sides just need to move on, I think, at this point. And he's maybe got to go to a different defense, and Green Bay just has to figure out something different because it has not worked. It hasn't worked since his rookie year. And I know injuries played a lot of part in that, but even his second year pre-injury, he was playing really rough football before any of the injuries happened. So,
Yeah, we're living off of hype from 2021 still, and that was several major injuries ago.
Very much so. A couple of things before we get out of here. One, Packers Lions, what are you looking for in this one?
Hey everyone, this episode is brought to you by Manscaped, the global leader in men's lifestyle and grooming. Every man knows the unbeatable feeling of a fresh barbershop shave. Now, what if I told you that you no longer have to wait weeks or even months between appointments to experience it? Introducing Manscaped's newest innovation, the Chairman Pro Electric Foil Shaver, the game-changing tool that brings the luxury of a professional shave right into your home. Now, whether you're after that daily silky smooth finish, or if you prefer to maintain a rugged 5 o'clock shadow, the Chairman Pro Electric Foil Shaver is your go-to for precision and style every time. So head over to manscaped.com and join over 11 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by using code PACKADAY for 20% off plus free shipping. I still remember going through high school and college with a crappy razor and showing up to class with toilet paper stuck to my face and trying to stop. It was an absolute nightmare. It was not a good scene. I only wish I had a Chairman Pro when I was younger. And here's the thing. The Chairman Pro isn't just for daily shaves either. It's powerful enough to tackle up to a 5-day growth, making it perfect whether you're shaving every day or just tidying up after a few days. And with up to 75 minutes of runtime on a single charge, you can take your time getting the perfect shave. So you can get the Chairman Pro today and experience a shave that is as smooth as you deserve. So get 20% off and free shipping with code PACKADAY at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with a code PACKADAY at manscaped.com.
Man, so the thing that Lions fans are worried about right now is just Goff turning into a pumpkin. But for Goff to turn into a pumpkin, he has to get pressured. That is not something that the Packers are good at right now. Rashawn Gary's pressure numbers are going up a little bit more like week to week. But Smith, Van Ness, and Igbaré, I looked at their pressure percentage, and it was something like 65 qualifiers, and I think the highest one was like 55th, right? So they're all bottom 10 qualifiers in the league right now. Yeah. Hoping Wyatt is fully healthy. Maybe some interior pressure can get home. I know that spot hasn't been great for Detroit recently. Their tackle situation is still very good. I'm just hoping pressure Goff. Because if you can't pressure Goff and he's just going to do his thing now where he's just like, yep, I've completed 22 of my first 25 passes. It's like, all right, we're not going to be able to stop a machine. You know what I mean? Their wide receiver unit is super weak right now. Like, I think it's like Khalif Raymond is like their wide receiver two as it stands today because of suspension.
Because of Williams, yeah.
Yeah. And then Tim Patrick too is out there. Allen Robinson's getting called up. That is funny. I did not know Allen Robinson was on this team. So yeah, I mean, the passing game from a wide receiver perspective is not great. It's just, you know, if you're able to let Goff just sit back there and operate, that's a pretty big deal. And then on the other side of the ball, big question mark for me is just like, okay, we have a banged up center and a banged up quarterback. Let's see how that works out.
Yeah. Yeah, that's going to be not ideal. The Lions are an absolute buzzsaw right now. You get no Aiden Hutchinson, which is definitely a nice advantage. You get no Jameson Williams, which is definitely a nice advantage. But ask Tennessee how much that mattered last week. And I know Green Bay is better than Tennessee, but still, they are a absolute machine. They're going to run like
those safeties are very good. Like those safeties might be the best safety pairing in football. Kirby, Joseph, the guy who, you know, he picked off Aaron Rodgers multiple times in that one game at the end, right? And then Brian Branch, who moved over. I mean, Packers fans probably know Brian Branch. They were begging for him to be a Packer in the first round a couple years ago. He's actually a full-time safety now. Last year, he was playing in the slot for him. Terrion Arnold is very handsy. Like very he might handy. End up being like one of the most penalized players in the entire sport, maybe like the last decade by the end of this season. So that's something to watch out for, but all those guys are kind of getting after the pass rusher a little bit. That interior is pretty good. I saw the Josh Pascal thing. I don't know if he's playing or not. I know basically he had like a benign tumor that was part of his old draft process. Okay. He was at Kentucky. He ended up having to miss a year when he was at Kentucky. And, I think they rediscovered another benign tumor in him. I don't know what the situation was though. I didn't fully read up into that. So he might be one of the replacements for Aiden Hutchinson, right? Is why that's important. So keep an eye on that.
It's going to be a very interesting matchup. Hopefully Green Bay can find a way to get the best of it, and hopefully the injuries don't play a major factor in this game. But Green Bay's been weird when they've been had players out and they sort of play up to it at times. And who knows? Yeah. Football is crazy. And either way, I'm very excited for this. I think Detroit opened as 4-point favorites. Should be a fun game no matter what at Lambeau. Last thing. Could it be the end of two former Packer great eras in Mike McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers that we are seeing be done right in front of our eyes? And could this be it? Could we be seeing the very last seasons of McCarthy and Rodgers?
Well, McCarthy, I think, is done. That team just has not lived up to expectations. I don't know what – just think of, like, the internal monologue of the Dallas Cowboys right now, right? You've basically already spent the money.
Yeah.
Where can you go from here? You have to go for savior coach, because that is the only wiggle room that gives you any opportunity in the near future. And, you know, Jerry's not getting any younger, right? Like, people have been saying this for a decade now.
You know, who's fired too.
It's Bill.
It's a million percent Bill. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
I don't know if Bill will take it. Will Belichick take it, do you think?
I don't know. I think Belichick would want full control of the front office, or at least a big enough say. And I think Belichick's going to come in with his own cronies too. And I don't know if Jerry wants to do that. I think Jerry likes everyone working for him. And I think Belichick wants people to work for him. And so I don't know if that's going to fit.
If Jerry got figured out Parcells, I don't know. Maybe Belichick just follows in the Parcells footsteps. I don't know. Who knows?
Parcells coached the Jets and told Belichick, do not do this. And he resigned on a napkin, right? So how much of that matters. So especially with Jacksonville potentially opening up, everything that I've heard there is a mess. Just internally, like, there's just basically like a giant political battle happening from like 15 different angles. Belichick, known to like the beach, right? Like, I could see him, just like Shad Khan signs a giant check to make himself look like not the biggest bozo in the world. Belichick says, good, I have full control. I get to hang out on the beach. I get to hire all my friends. Like, this is exactly how I wanted to end my career. I think that makes a little bit more sense than Jerry. But I think Jerry is going to try to sign Bill. Aaron is due $37.5 million next year. That is a lot of money to walk away from. As someone, when I was with the XFL, my boss's boss was Oliver Luck, father of Andrew Luck. And I got to see the whole situation kind of develop in terms of Andrew walking away from that money, right? And every single person would tell Andrew and Oliver to his face, to their faces, I guess I should say, there's no way that you're going to turn down all this. Like, you're going to be back in a year. You're going to be back 2 years, whatever it is. You can sign a $100 million deal. You're going to come back. No one believes that people will actually turn down these type of figures down, right? So Andrew did it. We'll see if Aaron does it. If Aaron does it, I'm going to have to see it first, though.
Yeah. Right?
That's a lot of money. At this point, like, if he thinks that his legacy with the Jets matters, how much more damage could he do with the Jets? Like, I don't mean to be a dick about it, but like,
no, I get it.
He's got 2 wins in 2 years.
It's not great. It can't
get that much worse.
No,
you're making, you know, $37.5 million in cash.
Here's how you solve everything, Justice. The only person that Aaron's had success with really is Mike McCarthy. You got to bring Mike McCarthy to New York next year. Fix everything. Get the whole band back together.
There's no damn way. It will be interesting to see what happens if that job opens up, because I know they had to do the whole like kid gloves thing with the Hackett situation, where they're like, no, he's still the offensive coordinator. He's just not calling plays. Like, are they going to keep him for the next, like, is Van Pelt going to get fired from New England? Like, that might actually happen. Like, is he going to be the new offense coordinator for Aaron? Like, I saw Jets fans freaking out, and they're like, why does Aaron take it down in 1 second every single time on the play clock? And I'm like,
welcome.
Dude, we tried to tell you. You said we were angry. We were not angry. It's just like, there's certain things that are just going to keep happening.
Over.
That's how Aaron plays.
And over. And it's over.
Look, net you take it, especially when Aaron was in Green Bay and he was still, you know, had young legs and stuff and was able to move around and things. But it's just obviously not working with the Jets right now. But
not at all.
I take the money.
Yeah, I don't know what happens with him and the Jets. That's going to be a fascinating situation to keep an eye on. The Jets are going to lose to the Texans on Thursday. They're going to need to be sellers at the deadline. I don't know if they will, but like,
did you know the Jets are favorite in that game?
I did see that, like by like a half point or a point or something.
What the hell is happening in that game? Like, I know the Texans defense is still banged up, right? Like they just signed a linebacker.
Diggs is probably out now and they're still without Collins,
but
it's still weird.
Wide receivers moving lines this Jets team is not good.
No, they're brutal. They're brutal. They're horrible. Yeah, I don't know. That's a very weird. It is at home on a Thursday night. Home Thursday nights are weird sometimes, but and it's not like Houston's been tearing it up by any means either. They barely beat the Colts. They lost to the Packers, but it still is very, very fishy. Like they just lost to the Patriots. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. They're a very weird franchise, but we know either way, the Rodgers and McCarthy things will be interesting to keep an eye on from a Packers standpoint. Last thing on Rodgers really quick. I think that of all the things that like you can go back to Rodgers on and be like, what were you sort of thinking or what's going on? Like the fact that in 20 and 21, he won back-to-back MVPs in Matt LaFleur's system. And like, especially like, was it, I think it was 20 where he like really ran it to like the extent that I think Matt wanted it more and it looked awesome and he bought in and everything was like literally perfect. And there was a lot of the motions and everything that Matt kind of does now for like him by 2022 to come around and just be like, no, I want to go back entirely to do it kind of like the way that I want to do it. I don't want to see all this other stuff. And then to go to New York and go completely away from anything like that. Like the fact that he won the two MVPs in that system, specifically in 20, the way he played that year, and then wanted to go anything away from that is one of the more bizarre, crazy things that I've ever seen.
Some of these guys do not like it, man. Like Brady did not want to do back to ball play action. Aaron Rodgers wants to be a West Coast guy.
I get right? it, but like you just had success. You just won an MVP in it.
You're preaching to the choir. Like run, stretch, and boot every single play. Like yeah. I'm that guy, right? That and RPOs, like call it good. I never have to like do actual real deal five-step gun drop back pass. Like that's fine with me. Those dudes, the all world athlete, you know, dudes who could be in the Olympics or, you know, sprinting off the ball or trying to take my head off. I'm good on missing that. At least give me a little bit of misdirection. But some guys do not like it. It's a odd thing. I do think like, I know people make the jokes where they're like, you know, he's just bringing in all his friends and stuff like that. He's trying to win how he wants to win. And I think Jets fans just didn't believe it.
Yeah.
I think they were just like, no, we're not going to like sacrifice things just to, you know, placate his playing style. It's like, you're going to
have to.
You want him under center.
Yeah.
So
you're selling your soul in a way, like just in the fact that you get this potential high-end quarterback, but you're going to have to do some very specific things his way in order to get it. And if it, like to your point earlier, if it pays off and he plays well, by far and away worth it. But when it doesn't go well, it can go very sour very, very fast. Hi, Justice. Awesome stuff as always. You're the absolute best. Where can we find all of your incredible work?
AcmePackingCompany.com, Twitter/X @JUMOSQ. I'll probably be tweeting about the Dodgers. A decent amount between about my Ducks, number one ranked Ducks. I was told the Big Ten is going to be hard. Big old bad boys. It's going to be tough.
Did Evan Williams didn't have any eligibility left, did he?
I don't know if he had a fifth year, actually. He transferred in for one season from Fresno State.
Can you imagine if they still had Evan Williams playing for him?
Yeah, dude, that would be so cool. Yeah, but we don't got him right now. We got Michigan this week. Excited for Michigan to throw for 5 yards. That'll be fun.
College football. What a game. Justice, you're the best. Follow him on Twitter @JUMOSQ. You can find me @AndyHermanNFL. You can find the podcast @PackadayPodcast. That's going to do it for Justice and I today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.